Episode 3 Wyverns. Last time on Dragon Shield Kingdoms, Vicar's Conquest. High Mage Valera saved Satyrion from certain death by transporting him from the Tower of Mages courtyard to her inner sanctum. He encountered two decanters of dust, one that held shimmers of the white and one of the black. Satyrion found Valera at her desk and tried in vain to convince her to allow him into the Guild of Court Mages. He grew more desperate with each passing second until he instinctively performed a wild act of dustcraft, breaking the decanters and conjuring an attacking dragon's head out of dust. Valera evaded the attack and subdued Satyrion. The act convinced Valera to grant him entrance to the sister organization of the Guild of Court Mages, the Jester's Society. Satyrion reluctantly accepted a posting in the society, unwilling to head home empty-handed. Valera transported Satyrion to the Jester's Society headquarters, but not before threatening that if she ever saw him again, she would end him. Valera then met with General Karras of Vicar and asked him to take Satyrion and Citrine with him on his mission to the Outlands to discover the cause of the mysterious madness sweeping the countryside. Vicar accepted, knowing that he might have to kill Citrine and Satyrion both. Welcome to the Justice Society. A pie splattered in the face of a woman a few feet from Satyrion. She wiped the cream from her eyes, smiled, and tried, but failed, to duck the next one.
"That's the most beautiful sound in the world, ain't it?" said the Entek Jester, hanging upside down from a trapeze in front of him, several feet in the air. He had on harlequin-patterned tights and held a scroll of parchment that tumbled to the ground like a dragon's tongue bursting between its teeth.
"What is?" Satyrion said, handing him the handwritten letter from Valera recommending him for the society.
"Cream pie against an unsuspecting face," the jester said with a smile.
He took the letter and cross-checked it against his list as Satyrion tried to find where the trapeze ended. It simply ended, free-floating in the air without being attached to anything.
"Recommended by the High Mage herself, eh?"
the intake jester said.
"So you'll be skipping the preliminaries."
Another pie, another splat.
"Yup," Satyrion said. "Seems so."
"Would you like to go around with the pies anyway?"
"What for?"
"For fun,"
the intake jester said, swinging himself into the air, completing a backflip and landing gracefully in front of Satyrion, scroll still in hand.
"No thanks," Satyrion said.
The intake jester frowned.
"Well, aren't you a downer?"
he said, scribbling something on his parchment and handing him back Valera's note.
"Everything seems to be in order. If you would just follow the floating neon arrows, you'll be given your tools of the trade while we process your assignment."
"My what?"
Satyrion said.
"Your tools, you know, of the trade."
Satyrion stared at him blankly. The intake jester sighed audibly and yelled,
"Hey, Lenny, take over intake for me, will ya? I'm gonna show this newbie the props."
"What do I look like, your pet?"
another man said. He was naked from the waist up and had the unfortunate condition of elephant head. As in, his entire head was that of an elephant, tusk and trunk and all.
"Just do it before I rip those tusks from your dead body."
The two guffawed like old pals. Satyrion was confused, but expected that was a normal feeling when in the headquarters of the Jester Society. The jester handed his scroll over to Lenny and led Satyrion past several free-floating, brightly colored and flashing arrows.
"Name's Hollis,"
he said, leading Satyrion into another room that was impossibly full of trunks, props, noisemakers, eccentric hats, tights, and explosive devices that boomed at random.
The room was larger than any that could have physically existed inside the tent. Satyrion was impressed at the level of dustcraft that must have been used to create the space and thought perhaps he could learn something from these fools after all. Hollis snapped his fingers and a trunk came flying from the inner depths to land in front of Satyrion. It swung open and he grabbed a little bit of everything, filling the trunk full of robes, water-spraying flowers, confetti, hoops, flaming pins, self-bouncing bowls, harlequin-patterned undergarments, self-refilling pies, enchanted fruits, light makers, and several other items Satyrion could not name.
"There," Hollis said, sitting on the trunk to get it shut. "Everything a jester needs."
"Great," Satyrion said dryly.
"Everything but a good attitude. Why the sourpuss?"
"I didn't think this was how my day was going to go," Satyrion said.
"Didn't wake up thinking, today is the day I fulfill my life's dream and become a fine member of the Justice Society?"
"No," Satyrion said.
"Then you'll fit right in." "No one ever does," Hollis said. "Oh, I almost forgot. Here."
He took a large volume off the top of a stack and handed it to Satyrion.
"Read it from cover to cover."
"What is it?"
Satyrion asked, wiping dust off the cover. It read, "The Handbook to Avoid Tomfoolery, A Guide to Jesting, Second Edition." It had an introduction written by Sir Justin the Jester, but mostly consisted of hand-drawn cartoons and blank pages.
"Our holy book," Hollis said. "The first commandment of the Society of Jesters is never to take yourself too seriously. The lives of most folks end before they've even had a chance to realize they were living. We may no longer be eaten by dragons, but the real dragon, if you will, is life. Might as well do a cartwheel while you can. Juggling too is always acceptable."
Satyrion read from the introduction.
"Are you serious?"
"No,"
Hollis said.
"But that's kind of the point, isn't it?"
Satyrion closed the book and tried to put it in the trunk.
"Wait!"
Hollis called as Satyrion unlatched it. The trunk snapped and roared as if it were alive and hungry. A long tongue came slithering out and whipped at Satyrion, but the jester smacked it with a fold-up fan he had gotten from somewhere and said,
"Down, boy!"
He kept smacking it on the tongue until it receded into the trunk and he could latch it shut again.
"I wouldn't open that unless you've got an offering," Hollis said. "Socks usually will do."
Satyrion opened his mouth as if to say something, but found himself, for the first time in recent memory, speechless.
"Right, let's go. Your assignment should be ready by now. I remember my first assignment. Dancing lessons for a mayor's daughter. I taught her a thing or two about all manner of fine dancing."
Hollis danced by himself as he spoke, twirling his way forward until they left the room and came to a wall of neat rows of tin nail boxes. Each box had a slit in it that spit out pieces of parchment at rapid-fire pace, and bells above that clanged whenever a new piece of parchment appeared. Underneath the slit were names that were magically scribbled in to tell who the assignment was for, and then disappeared as soon as the intended took the parchment. The entire system had the effect of creating a never-ending clatter, as the parchment came much too fast for the recipients to take. Most pieces fell to the floor, forcing people to crawl over one another to find their assignments. Satyrion had no such trouble as Hollis swiped his assignment as soon as his name appeared and the bell clanged.
"Here you are," he said. "Let's see, let's see."
Hollis examined the parchment. If he wasn't already wearing white makeup, Satyrion would have sworn his face turned ghostly.
"What is it?"
Satyrion asked.
"You're assigned to General Kurosov Vicar," he said, "on his expedition to the Outlands to find the source of insanity spreading from village to village."
Hollis gulped and handed Satyrion the parchment.
"Tough break," he said.
Before Satyrion could examine the parchment himself, he heard someone scream,
"Watch out!"
as a stray pie smacked him upside the head. Satyrion Duchesne could take a lot of indignities. He could handle being passed over for the Guild of Court Mages so long as he had something else to fall back on, Justice Society or not. He would endure the work of joke-making and a life of servitude as a fool, as long as it came with instruction in the ways of dustcraft and access to dust. He would wear the stupid hat, sing his little song, even take getting pied once in a while, so long as in the end he would acquire the skills necessary to wield true power. It would be worth it, he told himself when High Mage Valera suggested he join the society. He would show her that he was worthy, that he had something to offer, that Satyrion Duchesne was more than a farmer's son, destined only to wield the power of dust one disastrous night in his life. He would master that power, make it his. And if the Justice Society was the means to that end, he would accept. But that was before he'd received his assignment to join General Karas of Vicar. That wasn't an assignment at all. It was a death sentence. "Can I talk to anyone about this?" Satyrion asked Hollis, wiping the cream off his face with a hand towel.
"Like who?" Hollis said. "You think there's an assignment fairy that you can seduce?"
"I don't know," Satyrion said.
"Anyone?"
"Afraid not," Hollis said. "The assignments come from the top."
"The top?" Satyrion asked.
"The very top," Hollis said.
"What top?"
"The big top," Hollis said.
The big top, Satyrion knew, was the equivalent in the Justice Society to the High Mage in the Guild of Court Mages.
"So all I have to do is talk to the big top," Satyrion said.
"Where can I find him?"
"You can't," Hollis said. "He's on holiday."
"Well then, when will he be back?"
Hollis shrugged.
"He's been gone for about 7 years, and he said he'd be back in 2 weeks, so you do the math."
"Great," Satyrion said dryly.
Hollis pulled Satyrion in close and whispered in his ear.
"Look, I know you're new at this, and I probably shouldn't say anything, but if I were you, I'd flee. Run in the night. Leave Sylvania and never look back. Word is General Vicar doesn't like jesters, and if it comes down to you or his men, who do you think you'll save?"
Satyrion gulped. Hollis smiled.
"Anyway, welcome to the Jester Society. We are so thoroughly amused you're here."
Wyvern.
Hollis handed Satyrion a plump bag of coin.
"Your advance," he said. "Most of your expenses will be covered by the company, but if you were to, become misplaced, it might help you get to where you're going."
Hollis gave an exaggerated wink.
"Thanks," Satyrion said, taking the bag and pocketing it.
"So long, noble traveler,"
Hollis called, backflipping into the tent to what Satyrion assumed would be a particularly annoyed Lenny the Elephant Man. As Hollis disappeared behind the closed flap of the tent itself poofed out of existence. 1 second it was there, the next, gone. Satyrion found himself now in an unfamiliar alleyway. It was night, and he could smell smoke. The boom of marching footsteps rocked the glass in nearby window panes. He dragged his trunk noisily behind him as he made for the main thoroughfare where people ran screaming. Guilists wearing off-white plate matching the color of their robes marched through the streets carrying torches and banners splattered with guile, their dragon god's image. They held lances and wore four-spiked metallic green helmets.
"Hey,"
Satyrion said, grabbing a man as he tried to run by.
"What's going on?"
"The guilists have found a wyvern," he said. "They're going to execute her."
Wyverns. Satyrion's mother's voice rang in his ears, and in an instant, he was a boy again, no more than a handful of years old. His mother sat at the end of his cot and told him how he shouldn't hurt the farm animals, that they were living things and that all living things were to be respected, that if he did not behave, she would write to the Guild of Court Mages and tell them he was a wyvern, and they would send their mages to take him out of his bed in the middle of the night to whisk him off, never to return. Most dust crafters required the physical substance of dust already siphoned to perform magical feats, practicing for decades before learning how to pull a limited amount of dust from nothingness. Wyverns were dust crafters born with the ability to pull limitless dust from existence itself. Their access to unlimited power was viewed as a threat to the democracy as well as useful if they could be controlled. Shortly before he left Nergrind, Satyrion had come across a guileist handing out leaflets decrying the blasphemy of those who perform dustcraft without first sacrificing for the privilege. Wyverns were high on their list of blasphemers who required swift retribution for the sin of their powers. Their existence threatened one of the core tenets of the guileist's religious beliefs. All power comes at a price, and all dust must return to dust. It seemed Andros's prediction that the newly converted governors would tip the power in Sylvania toward the guileists had come faster than Satyrion could have dreamed.
Gale for all! All for Gale! Wyverns will be sent to hell!
Chanted the cultists. The man pulled away from Satyrion's grasp. Satyrion felt the need to run and hide, although he was not a wyvern, and therefore had nothing to fear from the mob. At least, not yet. Not until they decided to turn their attention to the jesters, who not only refused to suffer for their dust, but who actively used it as a punchline in most jokes. He could not pull away, however, and was pushed along with the mob down the road until he saw the swinging beagle-shaped sign of the Drunken Bunk.
No, Satyrion said. In a flash, he remembered the guileist messenger coming to the bunk on behalf of the Democratic military earlier that day to deliver a letter to Portia. He remembered Andros telling him it must have concerned Citrine to make Portia so hysterical when she read the letter. He tried now to remember what the guileist's face looked like. Was he disgusted? Was he in the crowd? Had he scurried off from delivering the letter on behalf of the government to round up this very mob so they might enact their own form of justice before the democracy could usher the wyvern away to some secret place? Is that why the bunk's doors were closed, its windows dark? Did Portia know that the guileists were close? Was that why Andros had come to Sylvania early, to smuggle her out of the city before it was too late? Glass shattering shook Satyrion from his thoughts. Flaming bottles were flung through the windows of the shuttered and dark bunk. Flames danced across the tavern. Satyrion left his trunk behind and ran toward the entrance, calling for his friends. Andros! Citrine! A blast of wind lifted him off of his feet as Citrine's screams cut through the street like ice. From the fire came a shadow, thick and oppressive like tar. It seeped out of the broken windows, through the cracks in the foundation, underneath the door until it formed solid tendrils and struck. The front row of guileists were taken down in an instant as the wooden door of the tavern blew to pieces. Citrine, the platinum-haired girl, floated in an orb of purple energy. Light twisted and bent around her as she floated forward. Dust fell upwards like an upside-down waterfall. Wisps of purple energy shimmered and formed new tendrils. Her eyes were filled with that energy, purple to the pupils as she lifted a hand and took out another three guileists. Her face a broken mask of fury. Several of the remaining guileists roared and struck with their lances, while others pulled out fistfuls of dust. Civilians scattered, running and screaming into the surrounding maze of streets and alleyways.
Citrine paid them no mind as the tendrils pushed her off the ground, lifting her even higher in the air. She raised a hand, and with it, three smaller tendrils rose and joined into one large tendril. She lowered it, and the massive thing crushed the dust-crafting guileists. Behind Citrine, the bunk burned. Satyrion could just make out through the smoke, Andros pulling Portia to the relative safety of his parked wagon.
"Retreat!"
Satyrion heard one of the guileists wail.
"Retreat?"
Citrine said, her voice booming with an unnatural resonance.
"You come to my home, threaten my family, and think you can escape?"
Smaller tendrils shot out from her energy orb and stabbed through the necks and spines of the retreating cultists. They fell without so much as a whimper. Citrine willed herself forward, and the tendrils moved her as if they were legs until she was on top of Satyrion.
"One left," she said, looking at him with those unnatural eyes and speaking in that voice that wasn't her own.
"Stop!" Satyrion said, a tendril wrapped around his neck.
"It's me. I'm not one of them."
As his vision darkened and oxygen left his body, Satyrion thought that at least he would not have to worry about fleeing in the night. He would be dead. That could be all right. Better dead now than after weeks on the road without friend or comfort. A flash of gold, and the tendril holding Satyrion's throat dissipated into black smoke. Satyrion crashed hard to the ground. A man, dressed in head-to-toe golden armor, stepped in front. He held an obsidian sword that shimmered with inlaid red and purple dust. A crimson cape fluttered in the wind.
"Stay here," the man said.
He leapt at Citrine, who screamed with animalistic rage. She struck with a tendril, but he dodged, barreling past her and landing in front of the inn. He held his sword high, and the red dust inside began to glow. The flames eating the bunk slowed their spread and somehow began to reverse, as if the sword called them home. The fire leapt off the counters and tabletops, off of the flesh of those caught in the fray, and disappeared inside the obsidian blade until all that remained was its smoking aftermath. A tendril grabbed him by the throat and lifted him into the air.
"Citrine!"
Satyrion yelled.
"He is not your enemy! He saved the bunk!"
But Citrine did not seem to hear him. All she heard was Portia singing.
"Swing, little dragon, swing, little bell."
Portia took a step forward from behind Andros's wagon. The armored man breathed deep as the tendril slipped from around his windpipe and dissipated into a gust of purple dust.
"Swing, little dragon."
Citrine hummed the song along with her mother until Portia was close enough to pull her into a hug. Citrine collapsed, and the unnatural shadows retreated inside of her. The light from the street penetrated the darkness again.
"It's okay, my sweet baby,"
Portia said as Citrine cried into her mother's shoulder.
"It's okay."
"Is it?" Satyrion wondered, surveying the wreckage. 11 dead, the street destroyed, the bunk almost burned to the ground. Citrine's secret was definitely out, which meant their lives had now changed forever.
"I do not mean to interrupt," the golden man said, "but we cannot stay here."
Satyrion could hear more guileists approaching.
"Come, get in the wagon,"
Andros called, already in the driver's seat. Portia helped Citrine in, and Satyrion dragged his trunk along with him as the golden man brought up the rear. They did not get far before a new crop of guileists surrounded them again.
"Halt in the name of Guile, the one true lord," one guilist said. "You harbor a wyvern, an aberration against nature itself and an affront to the Lord Guile. You will hand her over or taste the Lord's teeth."
Their lance blades flashed. The golden man stood.
You will step aside, for your god has no power here.
How dare you? Who are you? Take that helmet off at once.
The man shook his golden hair out of the matching colored helmet.
I am General Karasov Vicar of the Democratic Military. You are too late, Gellist. I have taken the Wyvern for the democracy. She is under my protection. Now step aside. Let my party pass.
The guileless seemed to sum Vicar up. His fingers twitched on his lance as a furor snaked through his followers. He let down his weapon.
Leave them be, the guileless called.
The general has claimed the Wyvern. For now.
Cautiously, slowly, the other guileless lowered their weapons and stood by as Andros strove through the parting crowd of off-white robes.
Where to?
Andros asked.
The jet fortress of the Democratic Military, Vicar said. You will be safe there. Follow my direction.
But as Andros drove away from the smoldering wreckage of the bunk, as Portia cried silently in the back of the wagon holding her daughter's head in her lap, and as Satyrion felt his chance to flee disappearing with every passing moment, Satyrion felt less like he was being whisked off to safety and more like he was being taken deeper into a dungeon where the only source of light would come from the fire he set himself on. Not for the first time that day, he heard his mother's dying laughter ringing in his ears.
Vicar's Conquest. Written by Ian Spiegel-Blum. Narrated by Dave Jackson. Produced by Johannes Barnson. Special thanks to Latoya Inerity and Elizabeth Nowak. Story editor Ryan Gomez of www.magicarcanum.com. Based on Dragon Shield characters and products. Available wherever great games are sold. With special thanks to all our Alpha readers who made this project possible.